Welcome to North 2, a production of Peaked FM. I'm your host, Corey Luna, and with me is Richard Hogben. Today I speak with Ray. As you may know, her noise is violence. Ray and I speak about learning about electronic music, DJing, synthesizers, and getting into the electronics and the itty-bitty bits of producing music, and where it has taken her, and getting a chance to play shows all over the East Coast, and very soon, internationally. This is a fun, wonderful conversation I had with Ray, and I'm really hoping to eventually meet Ray in person, maybe catch a show. You can check out a lot of Ray's music on their Instagram account, and also on their Facebook, and also on their Bandcamp page. Please look up Her Noise is Violence. So, Ray, please tell me a little bit about how you got into electronic music, how you got into DJing. I'm very curious about what your journey has been.
For me, it started probably as a kid, just hearing all kinds of electronica, I would call it back then in the early 90s, just developing a taste for just hearing that 303 sound. I started getting kind of into trance, the Prodigy, started kind of mixing my love of metal with the electronic side of things. So basically, I was pretty much a metalhead most of my teenage years, but I still had that love for electronic music, and it started growing and growing. I would say by the time I was about 17, 18, I was pretty obsessed with stuff like Jeff Mills, Josh Wink, just wanted to be part of that kind of style. Unfortunately, my timeline kind of intersected with vinyl and CD. So I started learning on vinyl at around 18, 19. And then by the time I actually got to play my first gig, it was all CD. So it was quite a weird transitional period to come in. It was hard being taken seriously for a while, because a lot of people had these assumptions that these new kids were coming in, they were more EDM focused and into the mainstream side of things. And there weren't a lot of people in my age group that seemed to be interested in going back to the roots of techno, to house, to the old acid house from the early 80s, you know. So it felt kind of isolating for a while until I kind of had a chance to so-called meet my tribe.
Okay, cool. You know, and that resonates a lot with me, because growing up in being a teenager in the 90s myself, and metal was very much a big part of my childhood growing up, and electronic music came in a little later for myself. But it was definitely something that I was extremely drawn to, and it wasn't something that my bandmates were listening to. So I just kind of had to leave the band and kind of pursue my own path at some point. And to me, that has been that was also just a better choice for myself, honestly. And electronic music has just flourished and become such a big part of my life, with, you know, the electronic community here in San Francisco, the Bay Area, and beyond. Every time I go out to a synthesizer convention, it's so inviting. Everybody's happy to see you. You're always welcome to be there.
Everyone wants to learn something or teach something. It's nice. It's more of a community.
Mm-hmm. And I see the roots of your metal with the logo of your artist name. Her Noise is Violence.
Absolutely. My friend Orlando put that together for me, and that just definitely fits.
What was one of your first synthesizers or drum machines?
Actually, ironically, one of the first synths I ever bought, it was totally a passion impulse buy. I bought an Ultranova off of eBay when I was about 20, and kind of messing around with the sounds on that. And then I realized, you know what? Like, I love this, but it's not for what I'm going to be using. So I kind of went back to the drawing board and started really thinking about what do I really want. I'm really loving what Behringer's doing right now. I'm a big fan of a lot of their clones. I do have the TD3 of theirs, and it's pretty awesome. I currently have a Electribe 2, and recently I was gifted a pipe, which I'm getting excited to use. It's from Soma. It's like a kind of a MIDI vocal instrument type thing there, and I'm looking forward to trying that out when we get back home.
Nice. I'm not really familiar with that instrument. That sounds really cool.
Let me see if I can pull up a link. Actually, this thing I have become obsessed with. So super excited to try this out. It's so hard to describe because I don't even think there's many things out there that are quite like this. Mm-hmm. It's done pretty well. Let me see. I wonder if there is a way that I could send you guys this link here, if it'll come up. There we go.
Excellent. Ah, Soma Synths. Very cool. Here we go.
But that is just, there's so much you can do. You could play it like an instrument. You could sing different vowel type chants into it. You could do pretty much anything you put your mind to. You could do something crazy with this. And I don't know if this is going to be more of a techno thing or a noise thing, but we're going to see what happens.
That looks so cool. Ray, that looks like something out of the legendary Pink Dots.
Seriously.
That's so
cool. Yeah. I'd like to see what they would do with something like that. I'm a big fan of Mr. Keys bands and projects, and also Edward Cospell. So
I'm excited to hear what happens in the future when you get a chance to really get into using the pipe. That looks so cool.
It looks awesome. I actually have it sitting here again. Once we get home back to our home studio, we're definitely going to mess around a bit. My partner also makes music as well, so we kind of share each other's gear. I've been messing around with their MS-20, which again,
yes,
just, yeah.
MS-20, Korg, oh my God, that's such a classic synth.
That is probably the end all be all. I'm also a big fan of some of the VST plugins they have going on now. It's a lot of really good stuff out there that you could, you know, work with MIDI and just, I'm sorry. No, I could be on cool. for hours.
No, it's all right. The MS-20, like for me, I think about Deutsche Amerikanische Freundschaft, also known as DAF, from the 80s, and like the beats and the dance music they were making back then, and how awesome it was, and how it was really a drummer and a guy on a synth and vocals, and they just made it work.
It's it definitely is inspiring because we have more than ever. But I think in a lot of ways that a lot of us are doing less. And then you see back then, that's all it took. And then there's the magic.
Yeah.
You can never replicate that. That is half gear and half having it. Magic, the passion, whatever you call it. They really, you know.
So tell me a little bit about working with your partner in collaboration. Obviously, I also want to know a little bit. I also want to know more about your solo work, but tell me about what's it like, the difference between working solo versus in a collaboration for you.
For me, I'm just going to be a little awkward and just say it. I'm autistic, so I'm very, very awkward when I speak to people in person. So it's 100% always going to be easier for me to work on my own, to flesh out ideas, to sit there and listen to a loop I've worked on for a few hours and just hyper focus on that. Working with others, it really depends. I do better if they're sending me stems of what they've been recording or messing around with in their DAW, and then I can kind of exchange with them. Working in person, usually this is hours and hours of conversation. Maybe we'll get a couple of things done, but it's a little draggy like that. Funeral Pyre, one of my side projects, it works a lot better, I think, because we're a bit long distance. So we'll trade stems, we'll trade recordings. But in the end, we're getting the work done. Otherwise, you know, there's some days where we're just going to sit here and talk about this one drum sound, and that's all we're going to do. On my own, I'll either take 6 months to finish something that I might not release, or, you know, in about a week, I'll know this is it. I'm going to try to put this out there. It's kind of my process, but I try to always keep working on something, even if it's just the framework that I can go back to later.
And tell me a little bit about your process of working with physical gear versus soft synths and your VST. What process works for you the most?
I would say definitely a combination. The noise end of things, I definitely feel like is the most hardware focused, whether it be putting together various recordings, using the different pedals, setting them up in different ways. It's more of a ritual trying to get certain sounds to sound the way that you want or the way that you feel. Sometimes the magic happens in the improvisation. With the techno, I'm either going to record a couple of loops here or there, just messing around on the Electribe or the TD3, or messing around with some other ideas. Sometimes I will, you know, work mostly in FL Studio in my DAW. I'll just sample in a few different things and kind of put things together. Citrus is one of my favorite VSTs. It's an ImageLine FM synthesizer. And then I also do use, it's ironic, but there's also a MS-20 VST as well. And I'm in there a lot, the ARP 2600. I also have a Buchla Easel VST, which I mess around in. And that's a grail. If I can ever get my hands on a real easel, like, that's it.
Is that the Buchla 5?
Soft synth? Believe so. It's it was part of an Arturia package.
Yeah.
And that is oh my God. I'm still going through it. And every day I get like sucked into something else and I'm like, oh, let's try this out. Not productive, but fun.
I hear you. I got that soft synth some years ago myself, and I too have definitely just fallen into the rabbit hole of just playing with it and just seeing what happens. There.
Just making, sometimes the sounds are fun and sometimes I'm sitting there listening to like a strange loop that's like, I love it though.
It's so fun. And I envy all my friends and artists who have an actual Buchla music easel or have collected and put together Buchla modules as well. It's crazy. One of my friends, Musical Fungus, who's been working with Buchla for many years now and has gotten many of the modules, he's even got the easel. Every time I talk to him, I learn more and more about what it's like to work with Buchla synthesizers. And it boggles my mind because I've never physically worked with one. But the way that it's designed is so different than working with something like a Eurorack.
It is probably the coolest thing I've ever seen. And I've also read, I've never touched a real one, but I've read that some of them were actually covered in LSD, or some people were getting like a weird contact high from them because of the experimentation going on with them. But I don't know if that's a rumor or what that's all about.
I think I've heard that rumor before. Yeah.
It's strange, but the Buchla is just, wow. The easel, again, if somebody's ever selling them or if Behringer decides to really clone it and it comes out, I definitely would be the first one to buy a Behringer clone. No hate on Behringer from me.
Yeah, fair. It's totally cool. Also, Tip Top Audio has also been making clones of some of the some of the modules and with which specifically they've been converting it to be Eurorack instead of Buchla. So it's, you know, so it can be incorporated into a Eurorack modular set much easier than trying to just go into using Buchla.
Yeah. I might think about that. The Eurorack end of things, it's still a bit Chinesey to me. I've messed around with VCV rack. I kind of have the idea, but I'm still kind of like that, the backwards end of things. I'm still a very basic drum machine girl, pedals, like just very simple, but, hopefully working my way up to perhaps doing some live PA stuff in the near future and learning more about the modular end of things.
I really hope to see that journey for you. I think you would really enjoy it. I'm curious, what pedals are you using in your sets?
DOD Death Metal, 100% is the end all be all for the majority of my noise. A lot of my samples also DOD Death Metal. It's funny enough, the cheapest pedal that I have is a Joyo Voodoo octave pedal. And I swear that thing does some crazy stuff. And if I pair that in with certain configurations, it's insane what you can do. I kind of like go back and forth between different things. Most recently, we picked up a weapon of mass destruction, and we picked up a couple of other Earthquaker devices pedals. But my chain has always been just DOD, an octave pedal, a couple of little other fuzz boxes here and there. But like, I am the cheapest, most budget friendly setup probably you'll ever see. I have a couple of like DIY noise toys. It's basically a piece of metal, couple of contact mics on there, a 1/4 inch input, and a rusted spring just soldered on there poorly. I have a couple of little spring boxes that I run with this stuff and just messing around with chains and different things like that and contact mics.
Cool. I love the experimentation.
I'm literally just a trial and error DIY kind of person. I know it sounds crazy. You know, some people, they're very musical. They have a knowledge of music theory. They can compose pretty much anything. And then there are people that have a very rudimentary knowledge. They understand key. They understand MIDI. They put stuff together that sounds good. It's just the same. Half the time for me, I'm trialing and erroring. I'm messing around with different patches, messing around with different sounds, different effects, and sometimes you strike gold and other times you learn a lesson. And that's kind of my ethos, just keep learning every day.
And that's the beauty of electronic music, is it allows you to have the experimentation in with your compositions. And it's always an educational progress.
It absolutely is. Yeah, I feel when you stop learning, you stop creating, because mm-hmm. there's never an end point. There's always something else to learn. And even, you know, when we were speaking about synths, there are certain synths you could buy 10 of the same model and they're all going to sound a slight bit different. Some are warmer, some are colder, some react differently. It's so weird. They all have their own personality. And there is also an endless amount of things. I mean, you hear Dr. Dre do one thing with a Moog. You hear another artist do something else. It's just completely wide open, and I love that. And I think it's kind of boring when you hear a lot of artists, and I'm not hating on sample packs, not at all, but there are a lot of people, it sounds like the same song every time you hear them. And it's unfortunate that it's kind of gotten that point with the internet. And I think accessibility, on one hand, it's great for people like me who's never really had a large budget. You know, we can have a software, we can build from there. There's cheaper gear. But then at the same time, I'm like, well, now there's about 1 million people out there and they're all using the same loops, and they're all downloading the same music to DJ with. And it's just, I think we need to focus on experimentation and uniqueness, because there's a plethora of tools even at all levels, you know?
No, you're absolutely right.
I get into my little rambles, but
and I'm here for that. Please, I welcome it.
Thank you guys for having me on here again, and I appreciate the patience.
You know, life happens, and we understand that. It's totally fine.
It's been a crazy period for myself and my partner, but we're looking to end out the year with some good news and finally get back to our house, and also looking into 2026. I'm thinking about finally taking the step over. I have some offers in Italy, and I kind of want to build on that and try to get some shows out there.
That'd be great. Just go international. Yeah.
Be really nice. I've had so much support over there from Carbone and Luciano Lamana. Like they've been really supportive, at least on the techno end of things. It's been nice to connect with other DJs and producers over there.
That's awesome. How did that connection happen?
I was a huge fan of the Carbone record label. For years, I would buy their stuff. I played a lot of their stuff in my sets. As soon as I started feeling a little bit more confident in my own personal production, I remember emailing them a demo, and then I got an email back, and they were like, "Oh, this is good, but it needs to be harder." So a couple of years passed by. I'm thinking about it. I finally set my intentions on getting something done, send it out to them. They loved it. They accept it. Now we're all talking. That was one of the only things that I've ever done that's made it onto a top 100 chart, track off of there, had made it onto the Beatport top 100, which is crazy for me, because that was never the type of artist that I ever thought I would be. Like, they're more in the darker hard techno. Some of them do speedcore and gabber. I'm a dork from the metal scene. So that was unexpected. That was a pretty cool endeavor.
And that track is called "Where Is the Rave?"
It is. It's actually a little bit different than my usual stuff, but it was pretty fun.
Yeah, I definitely recognized the sample from
Nizareb.
Nizareb, yes, thank you very much.
I'm a little bit worried about that, but you know,
don't worry about it. No one's gonna know.
Now they will. No, everyone probably will figure it out. But I try to take things and have fun with them. And I'm also a big fan of the EBM and industrial world, so I try to incorporate little things here and there. I was actually listening to an 82, I believe 1992 collection of Wax Trax records, recently, and just getting inspired by that. I think some of my sampling style with the repetitive samples and just certain little things I pepper in there, I have to blame half of Wax Trax, because Thrill Kill Cult, Ministry, just those sampling styles. It got so ingrained in me that, like, I feel like if I don't repeat a sample a few million times, not really, but I like that style. I'm trying to bring back that style in my own way.
No, I hear you on that, because I'm a big fan of those bands, that era. I'm a huge fan of Skinny Puppy and the samples they were using back then. And like, I like the 80s stuff a lot. You know, 90s was cool too. And even beyond that was fun. But there's something that really resonates with myself when it comes to the industrial scene coming out of the late 70s and into the 80s, where it really flourished.
even just going back, some of the Neubauten stuff, some of the Throbbing Grizzle stuff, just insane. Just the amount of creativity that people had, the boldness, these just going out and doing whatever you want and not caring about the end result. And the end result, you know, we all know their names now, but then they were beating their own drum and going their own way. And I really respect that. I respect that level of creativity and just unapologetically you. They weren't trying to be anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Throbbing Grizzle was so unique for its time, and there's nothing else like it. Having Chris and Cozy coming out of that, and yeah, Chris, you know, designing his own synthesizers back then to create the sounds that he wanted.
Just,
that's pioneering.
Like it.
Yeah.
And then just all of the side projects.
Yeah.
All of them.
So much. And even Chris eventually, years later, of course, I don't remember what the name of the company, I want to say maybe Future Sounds. They created modules based on Chris's designs for Eurorack specifically. And there's a few of them out there. I've never worked with them myself, but I remember researching and just finding them out there. And they're mostly, you know, very much like noise forward modular synthesizers.
But I might have to check that out.
They're there, and they sound, and I thought it was, and I'm very happy that exists and that became a thing and that people wanted that to be available in a Eurorack format.
I think that's awesome, actually. Again, I got to get into the Eurorack world. I've tried to ignore certain things for so long. Like, oh, I cannot spend the money. I can't do it. I know if I was able to do so, I would probably have an entire room of just random stuff that I probably didn't know how to use half of, but it would be like a little oasis. So,
you know, I highly encourage, just take your time with it, do your research, and find what inspires you to play. And that will slowly build over time. And you'll see, like behind me somewhere, you'll see a synthesizer glowing in the background. And you can't see it out of focus, of course, but like that's it's a big rack for Make Noise. It's like the two rows of 104 HP plus a Molt 1U in the middle, and that's been constantly in my music palette. Of some things have stayed in there for a while now. Some things switch out, but that's the beauty of Eurorack, of being able to just kind of pick and choose the different filters and voices and everything that goes into a synthesizer. You get to customize it to your liking.
That is pretty awesome. I definitely, as soon as I can kind of get out there and build something, I definitely want to spend some time learning about the modular end of things and just getting some Eurorack modules slowly but surely, you know.
Yeah, it's your own journey. Take your time with it, of course. I was curious also about how often are you getting out to play shows? I've seen a lot of your DJ mixes on your Bandcamp page for Her Noises Violence, and you've got a plethora. You've got a large variety of singles out there, and I was curious about how often you get a chance to play those on as live sets.
Unfortunately, I would have to say the past 2-3 years have been a really rough time between helping with some family, I would say bigger things going on, and I had to move a couple of times and just bought a new house, and just all of these crazy life situations have happened. So when I started around 2008, 2009, I would say by 2012, I was fairly decently traveling around, playing up and down the East Coast, DJing a lot more. I would say, but around 2020, 2021, the pandemic slowed everything down. Things were already slowing a lot down by 2018. I kind of got to this place in 21, 22 when things started opening up, getting out more. I streamed a lot more at first. I came back out just as I was starting to get back out there. Had to start canceling, unfortunately. And now, like, there's just been a lot of things the past couple of years that have been happening. So the last gig that I've played was in October of 23, unfortunately, I believe. No, 24. And that was at Summit in New York. And then it's just been, I know it sounds cliche, but one thing after another, just in some personal stuff happening. So between that and us not having been able to be back at home, just handling a lot of stuff, I haven't been able to really accept much. So the last thing I have planned for this year, just at this time, is in August, this month, on the 29th in Atlanta. Just based on where we are right now, when I did agree to this, we were still at home in South Carolina at the time, you know, so it was closer. So now I'm thinking I'm gonna have to figure out either we go home or I might have to just fly myself down, come back up here to help out some more. And then, you know, we'll see what comes from there. So in 2026, I'm looking to get back out there because it's really been a while for me, and it sucks because it's one of the few things that I really love to do, and I miss getting to travel and play stuff and interact with people more often.
And I hope that happens for you. You know, of course life does happen, and that's just part of life. I'm looking forward to hearing and seeing you get more out there and perform in 2026. And I really hope that you get a chance to get to explore going international, going out to Italy and playing sets out there. I think that will really open some doors for you.
Absolutely. You know, and just keeping on, keeping on. I do still have some stuff that I'm putting out, a noise tape probably towards the end of September of some stuff that I've been working on for a few years. So I haven't quite announced that yet, but it's coming. I finally gotten that decided upon. I'm not holding back. So even if I'm not playing as much, I'm going to still put that out there. It's going to be called Pain Shopping. And if you'd like, after this, I can send you a link if you'd like to check it out.
Yes.
In fact, let me see if I can pop that through.
Very much interested in hearing it if you're willing to let me listen to it, of course.
Absolutely.
Cool.
I definitely like sharing some stuff beforehand just to see.
You know, that's a great point, actually, of like having, you know, kind of a peer review with, you know, with colleagues that you admire and appreciate and trust with your work, just to give you some feedback of, you know, even if you need them to say, hey, how's this mix sound? Do I need to bring something up out of it? And it's always great to have those collaborators you can work with and that you can bounce ideas off of and have that support group to get the best quality of your work out there.
Absolutely. And oh my gosh, if it was not for certain friends of mine that have either been doing this longer or that also make their own stuff, definitely would not have learned or would have learned things a lot slower. So it's definitely nice having a couple of friends here or there to kind of check you too. Some people they need to just be honest and be like, look, get back in there, put some more work into it, EQ this a little bit, cut this out, do something. I need that. I need that, like, brutal, honest feedback. So I appreciate it. And somebody will just be real with me like that. It helped me mix better, I think.
I had a similar experience when I was putting out my first album, because I actually hired a mastering engineer for it for the first time. And right away, like, he gave me a page of notes saying, like, do your own mix, and this is what you need to do. And I learned a lot from that first session. that really helped me improve the sound quality of my recordings and what I was doing. And I've been able to grow and put more into that, of course. And again, having that feedback really instilled, okay, I need to take a step back and not rush the production and make sure I do it right.
That's the hardest part, I think, not rushing.
Yeah.
It feels like it's been a century when you've sat there and heard the same parts of a track for like 50 hours, just the same parts. And you're like, you know what? I know this is right. I know I've got it. It's done. And then getting the feedback and having to listen to it again, listening to it in the car, listening to it on another system, listening to it in a different pair of headphones, and then going, hey, you know, back to the drawing board. There are times where I will literally cut out a certain sound if I can't get it to fit in the EQ.
Really?
It's just, yeah, I know that's probably not ideal, but there are times where if something is not working and it feels like a battle, and if I have to do certain cuts or certain little tricks to get it to fit in and it doesn't sound quite the way that I want it to sound, I will just go right back and decide, you know what, we're going to try something else. We're going to go up an octave. We're going to try entirely different sound entirely and just, you know, kind of build from there. But I used to rush too much. I would finish something, be excited. Ear fatigue had already set in. I would think it was done the next morning. Not there.
And it's part of the learning process, and that's fine.
It's absolutely, yeah. I've been kind of doing this since around 2012, at least on the music making end. So I kind of came in there with the love of the music, loving to DJ, loving different formats of DJing, kind of slowly crept my way in there. So I would say from 2013 to now, I really didn't make anything that I felt truly satisfied with and that truly sounds like a good reflection of what I even want out there until like 2017. I think a lot of my earlier stuff, it was kind of all right, but like I was not ready to put it out into the world at all. So I'm glad I kind of took more of a time to like get that out there because, you know, I have some friends and they're like, you know, it's out there now and some people like it, but I do regret my first album. I do regret my first EP, but I just don't want to be there.
Yeah. No, again, it's good to take your time, you know, and you look at the artists that you admire and look up to that have inspired you over the years, and you see how there's a timeline of like 5 years, 7 years, sometimes 10 years between albums. And there's a reason for that, because that process takes time to put out quality work. And you want to give yourself that same grace.
And that's definitely kind of what I'm thinking in terms of if I'm ever going to have a full length techno release versus just an EP. With the noise stuff, I take a lot more of an experimental approach. So it varies wildly how long a recording or a track or whatever will take with techno. If I'm putting together 4 to 6 tracks, I need the time. I want to sit there and make sure everything's EQ'd to the best of my ability. I want to make sure this holds up. I want to make sure that this is me, that this isn't starting to sound like something I've heard too much, and just really intentionally get that out there. I do want to do that. I've definitely gotten sucked into that. You have to release a single or people are going to forget. Keep the momentum kind of pit. And I don't want to stick with that. So it's been a kind of a great relaxation break, at least in terms of working on music while life has just been so hectic and busy because I've kind of had time to think now. And going forward, I think when I do put together an album, I kind of want to take that time, whether it'll be at least 1 year or 2, 3 years, 4 years. I want to put something out there that is reflective of what I've learned, and also shows that I'm more than just, oh, here's a single DJs.
Right. It's better to take your time to put out your best quality work instead of trying to stay prolific and up and trying to compete with the rat race of what social media is, pushing everyone to create content so often and so much of it that it becomes oversaturated and there's less quality work out there.
It can get really overwhelming, and also just, there are some very successful people out there. I do respect the hustle, and I respect, you know, that they're doing something that's very successful. But I follow some people that, you know, they teach you tips and things like that. And there was one person that was saying, you know, and they have the engagement to back it up, but they're like, if I don't release a track every 2 weeks, everything just falls flat. And I think that I have to blame, you know, this instant culture that we have, this instant, if the video doesn't load in a nanosecond, we're going to keep scrolling. If we don't have something new to look at every 2 seconds or an advertisement. But I wish people would listen to full albums more, full releases more, and kind of sit with it, because there's so many successful artists out there that, you know, they're teaching you the tools of their trade, and they're telling you that if you don't keep this insane workload, and I don't care if you're an expert or a beginner, I mean, putting out new music multiple times a month, that's a hard thing to keep up with. It's rough. Whether you're putting in a minimal amount of effort or the maximum amount of effort, I feel like, you know, it's a lot of work to do. And I think that what I hope in the coming years is that people will take this fast food, you know, 30 second, and then we skip to the next thing culture, and kind of just sit with a release and digest it. So creators don't have this pressure of, we need to market, we need to sell, we need to put something out every 2 seconds or else we're going to fall into irrelevancy. And it's there's a lot of pressure on that more than like the genre itself or the music itself. It's almost like the music is this tiny speck, and then 97% of everything else is marketing. And I just feel like it just leaves a lot of the fun out and the creativity there. It's just more sales. And I really don't like that. If you find me, cool, but I don't want to feel like a used car salesman.
Yeah. Yeah, and I get that too. Like, I'm not pushing my music out there at all. It's like, if I meet people who are also into similar music, I might say, hey, check this out, you might like it. But other than that, it's like, you know, of course with you, it's like, I'm happy to share my music with you, but you know, we're like-minded. I think we have a lot of similar tastes in music. And I think you would probably dig the kind of music I've been producing over the past couple of years. So,
absolutely.
You know, and that makes a lot of sense for us. But again, like, I'm not going to go out and like, you've seen plenty of sponsored advertisements here and there for different types of music. It works. It, you know, marketing does work overall, but you don't need to have to do that. You don't need to. And, you know, and there's a lot of us who, as you said, you don't want to feel like a used car salesman. Like, you'd rather people come to it naturally and discover it. And a lot of the music that we grew up listening to, it wasn't sponsored to us. It was your friend or your sibling showed you some cool music in your adolescence, and you said, hey, this is cool. And a lot of it was more word of mouth than anything else.
You bought the record, the tape, the CD, you listened to it, you sat with it, you listened to it again. Even if you didn't like it, you'd listen to it. And I feel like now we just click through. We don't even probably remember everything that we've heard. I feel like at this point, we've probably on average consumed by like the end of the day, thousands, without even knowing it, just passively, thousands of different songs. If you're in a store, if there's an ad, if there's a commercial, scrolling through Instagram. It's just, I think that we're just bombarded with media so much now, just TikTok and this and that and just everything all the time, that I feel like people are listening to more, but they're listening less. I think we're just, we're disassociating and tuning things out. And then maybe if you hear a little catchy piece, it'll jar you from your distractions on distractions. But for the most part, I don't think people are really actively listening. There's a few of us out there, of course, but I think there's less and less of a demographic of true active listeners. And that also makes you think, you know, I'm creating for me. We're creating for ourselves, hopefully. But after a while, it's like, are we going to get to a point where it's not even about the music or the video or the art anymore? And it's just about, oh, it's just another thing. Oh, it's clout chasing, it's attention seeking. And it sounds like a bit of a ramble, but I wish people would sit down and read and listen and just look at something for more than a nanosecond before they became just so overstimulated, I think, without even knowing it. It's just, there's no way that I could sit on Instagram and listen to, you know, a bunch of 15 second snippets of tracks and get any idea of anything from that. It would be a lie if I said that, you know, I make heads or tails of anything that I hear on there. It's just, it's so much. I want to go back to the days of, if I like you, I'm going to buy your CD. I'm going to listen to it. So I try to do that, even if it's just a Bandcamp digital release. I'm going to sit there. I'm going to listen to it. I'm going to listen to it passively, actively, on different headphones, on different setups. And I just want to take it in. I want to hear it. I don't want to get distracted. I don't want to hear a 30-second snippet. I want to hear the full thing. I want to get to know it.
Yeah. And I think I'm probably, maybe, I'm not sure anymore if it's a generational thing of, I want to hear this as a full album. I don't want to hear singles. I want to hear a full album. And I want to sit with it. I want to hear it on different speaker sets because I enjoy listening to this journey of music. And that's something that I think we've both grown up with. And maybe the new generations aren't as familiar with that style of absorbing music.
Absolutely. I think that it's that, and it's also, I feel like kids now, my cats are playing over there. We brought them up here, so excuse them. But girls, I think it's just, people have this perception of being busy. And it's just, we don't feel like we have the time. We have more time than ever, but we don't have actual time. We're sitting there, we're scrolling, we're at work, we're in the car, we're here, we're there. So I feel like a lot of people don't think that they have the time to sit there and listen to an album because they feel like they have to be doing 10 other things while they do it too. Oh, I have to play a game while I do this, while I do that, while I'm still working, while I'm scrolling on TikTok. And it's like, you can't really absorb anything like that. And I think we've all gotten into just being so distracted from everything else that we couldn't focus on one thing if we tried. And then the younger generation, they're not really into the physical media. I get it and I don't get it. Some of it was forced on them by the way that the devices are going now. And some of it is just, you know, it's a matter of taste. It's a matter of personal preference. I think for them, they're satisfied with Spotify because they really don't know any better. Like a 13-year-old to a 17-year-old today, they never really had to go buy a CD. Maybe they've listened to a record. Maybe they've listened to a tape. I doubt it. So it doesn't matter if they're just streaming stuff on Spotify. They don't really have a point of reference. I think the 90s kids were one of the last generations to really remember different formats, being in the household and having to sit down and listen to an album and not being able to go download or stream anything in the world ever. Growing up without the internet, we were kind of forced to focus on what we had. And I think that's like a big difference. Yeah, too much variety.
Yeah, I agree. And so there's just too much out. There's too much stimulation out there that disperses our focus. And it's good that we're able to bring that and recognize that and bring it back.
I think it's also a DJ's responsibility in the electronic end of things to kind of remind people that just because a song isn't getting 6 billion streams does not mean it's any less listenable than something else. And just trust the DJs a little bit. It's okay if you hear some things that you haven't heard before. That's the fun.
Absolutely is.
I really miss going out and before the days of smartphones and just being like, I wonder what this is. I'm going to go find this. Now, you know, it's a totally different world. And I kind of hope that we get back to a happy medium where we have a plethora of excess, but we also have just the stillness and the intention again. I want people to really just pick any album, even if it's something they've heard a billion times before. Just sit and listen, take it in, check out the cover art, just look through it, take it in. Remember that it's more than just a brief experience, that somebody poured their heart into it, that this has taken years in some instances, multiple people, multiple engineers. This is somebody's work. And this is why I don't think that music should be put into content, you know, in that little category, because it's more than that. It's more than a 10-second video. It's somebody's work. And it's becoming more and more devalued. And that really makes me sad because, you know, it takes a lot to get the courage to put yourself out there. And I think it takes a lot more to authentically express yourself in some cases, and to have that be measured by stream numbers or, you know, if it's short enough or long enough to fit into whatever algorithm that you're aiming for. It's just, it takes the art out of it. And again, it just feels more like a marketing strategy than, you know, an expression. And it makes things feel a lot like less authentic in general. It makes everything kind of end up feeling like, it's all about this, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the wonderful things that I've been seeing more is the actual younger generation now love going out to events and going to the shows and seeing the artists perform or the DJs perform. And this culture is still flourishing in a live performance setting. So, I was at a show last night in San Francisco at Gray Area. I went to go see Tom Hall, and it was this beautiful ambient show where it was him, there was R. Benny, there was Sharky Face, Ama Ataria, and there was another duo. I can't remember their name right now. It's something collective. I'll have to look it up later. But again, five artists, all ambient sets. Gorgeous. Everything was gorgeous. And one like Gray Area for me is like probably my favorite live venue in San Francisco. It's a converted theater, the old Grand Theater out here in the Mission District. Years ago, it was converted into this beautiful space for multimedia performances and installations. So there's over the years, you'll get to see different types of things happening in that venue space. But last night, it was just this great experience of half the audience was sitting and enjoying the music. And of course, and that was definitely the vibe of, you know, everything's more of a down tempo and atmospheric. Almost every single artist had a composer, like soundtrack style. Like I thought I was like, I swear I was either in, I felt like I was in Dune. Like
that's awesome.
On Arrakis, just like walking sand dunes throughout this music that is experiencing, and the visuals were also very similar of these just ambient auras of not any particular space, but just out there kind of shapes and forms as they continuously organically changed throughout the music. And every set had a unique style of video projection, and it was just encapsulating in the fact that I got to experience it. And I got to see my friends who happened to be other artists there as well, performing. R. Benny was one of the performers who closed the evening. And I think I swear that maybe a few of us may have been in tears just from his performance, as the way that he composes electronic music, and he's performing on Eurorack. It's tranquil and ambient, and his video projections are a combination of videos that he takes in nature on hikes.
Oh, so I love that.
It's like babbling brooks, it's trees, and he's bringing the camera like slowly out of focus, into focus, and then out again through like a 5 minute timeline. And it just continued like that.
I love stuff like that.
No, it was cool. Like, and so I'm seeing that was my experience last night, of course, of going out and experiencing music. There was a nice crowd out there. And I think that a lot of people still want to go out and experience the music.
That's what I've noticed too. There is a bit of a shift with that. Definitely in certain scenes versus others, I have to say, just like you were saying, ambient noise, power electronics, even just the darker ritual ambient, you can't really compare it, you know? I think those people, they're really into it. Everybody that's there, 100% wants to be there. They are there for the art. They're there for the music. Even bands like Sun, you were mentioning at the show you were at, people sitting down and just absorbing the music, just enjoying the visuals and the sound. There have been some Sun concerts that people just get there and they'll lay in a sleeping bag and just feel the music. And I kind of love that, because it's more than just music to some. And for me, I can be awkward in every other facet of my life, but if I'm in a room with the right situation and the right visuals or the right sounds, it just transports you to another place. And that's kind of what keeps me going. I mean, there are shows that, you know, everything can be going wrong in your life at that time, and you'll go to a certain show and you'll get bathed in the frequency and the experience. And it feels life-changing. It feels like it's cleansed you. You leave feeling inspired again. You leave feeling excited. You leave feeling like, oh man, I'm not alone. And that's, those are the good things that keep me hungry and that keep me searching for community and searching for more things to enjoy and to create.
Very cool. Ray, thank you again for speaking with me for my podcast, North 2, for Peaked FM. I'm really happy that we got a chance to really deep dive into who you are as an artist. And it's been a real pleasure speaking with you today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And again, my apologies for last week. It's been a bit rough here lately. So thank you for taking the time to talk with me in my awkwardness. I very much appreciate it. And it's been very nice talking, and hopefully we'll get to check each other's stuff out soon. I'll definitely send over some links. So I really appreciate it.
Likewise, anytime, please reach out to me. You can hit me up on Instagram or email. If you want to send me some links or just share some other musicians' music with me, I'm open to it.
Absolutely. I love sending just some out there recommendations. So I absolutely will. Thank you.
You're welcome. And also, you know, when you've got shows coming up, let me know. Even if I can't make it, I'm happy to share the information for people who I might know in the area.
Thank you. I really do appreciate it. And likewise, of course.
Cool. Ray, thank you so much. You have a good day.
You too.